This conference is being recorded.
Kevin Quinn joining. Hello? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the March NJEDA telephonic board meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised, today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization which you are affiliated with. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. Now, I'd like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger and the Times at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Manera, if you could conduct the roll call, please.
Okay, sure. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Vice Chairman Charles Sarlo.
Here.
Okay. Commissioner Marlene Caridi from Banking and Insurance.
Present.
Catherine Brennan for State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Jane Rosenblatt for DEP Commissioner LaTourette.
Here.
Okay. Phil Elagia. Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Fred Dumont.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Rosemary Hicks.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Brian Wilson for the Governor's Office.
Here.
And let me try Phil Elagia again.
I'm sorry, I'm here, guys.
Okay, great. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera.
Oh, good morning, Commissioner Angelo.
We can't forget the Department of Labor. Listen, let's move on. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the previous month's minutes. Board members, before you, the minutes from the February 10th EDA board meeting for your review and approval. And consistent with our virtual meeting protocol, I'll ask board members to state their name for the record when making a motion or a second.
Fred Dumont.
Can I get
second?
Motion to approve the February 10th meeting. Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second, please?
Second. Brian Wilson.
Thank you, Brian. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next item on the agenda are some brief remarks I have for you this morning. News of another COVID vaccine developed by a company right here in New Jersey provides hope that we're approaching the end of the pandemic. The state's vaccination efforts are in full swing, yet the economic recovery remains a long road ahead of us. The EDA is still at the forefront of those efforts. Our Sustain and Serve New Jersey program was an unmitigated success. We anticipate providing approximately $14 million in grants to 27 organizations, supporting at least 160 restaurants in at least 69 cities, enabling the distribution of 1.5 million meals. Additionally, this past month, we reopened our PPE access program, which enables businesses to purchase PPE at discounts up to 70%. Over 10,000 businesses were approved to participate. The EDA is working hard to implement programs authorized by the Economic Recovery Act. That law was enacted to address ongoing impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic and build a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy. Programs authorized in the new law include tax incentives to incentivize job creation, new construction, and the revitalization of brownfields and historic properties, financial resources for small businesses, support for new supermarkets and healthy food retailers in food desert communities, new funding opportunities for early-stage companies in New Jersey, and support for the growing film and digital media industry. Turning this law into policy and programs is job one here at the EDA. We expect to see quite a few items on upcoming board agendas as implementation efforts gain momentum. We want to get it right, and we want your input on how to get it right. The authority's new website includes a page that allows the public to learn more about new programs and submit comments online at www.njeda.com/Economic Recovery Act. We welcome constructive input on how to ensure new programs are structured and administered in a way that drives opportunities for all residents and communities. Check back often as we anticipate posting additional materials over the next few months. Again, there is no more important focus than turning the Economic Recovery Act and the economic recovery of the state and its businesses. The faster the EDA can prudently turn law into programs, the faster we begin our road to recovery. I want to thank Governor Murphy for his leadership, and I want to thank the EDA staff for all that they have done for the state's business owners and communities. They've been tireless, they've been dedicated and driven, and I want to thank you all. Tim?
Great. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. First of all, thank you for those kind remarks about the team. I want to echo them. I think today I looked it up in preparation for speaking this morning. You've been saying it, you know, we're approaching the one-year anniversary of everything. The last time we were together in person, the March board meeting was exactly 1 year ago today, March 10th of 2020, and there's a meeting on my calendar later in the day for that day that I looked at that said discuss impact of coronavirus. It was a topic later in the day, and golly, was that a tip of the iceberg type of situation for the year that was to come. I think the chairman mentioned a couple things that I just wanted to highlight and echo, particularly Sustain and Serve. I think a great example of a really innovative and collaborative program that kind of really sprung into something and blossomed into something that has a significant statewide impact and is a win-win, if not many more multiples of wins in supporting restaurants that need business and folks that are hungry and need food during this time of economic dislocation. And so I want to give a shout out to Tara Coleman and Lee Apple in particular, who led the charge on that program, supported by a significant cast of folks from all throughout the agency and all throughout the AG's office and other places as well. But an extraordinary, I think, example of a creative, innovative program that's having a huge impact. I think if you've got a chance to read some of the press coverage, the human impact of being able to provide, you know, fresh, hot food to folks who may not have had a hot meal in a while is humbling and a reminder of the importance of the work that we do here. And appreciate the board's support for that program. A couple of things I'll just highlight. It continues to be a busy month, obviously, as Kevin just mentioned. You know, standing up the ERA programs remains a huge focus of our efforts. We also got some excellent news in the budget from Governor Murphy a couple weeks ago on February 23rd. A long list of things that are included in there that touch the EDA directly, not the least of which is additional funding for the Main Street program that was enacted and authorized by the Economic Recovery Act, another $50 million there, plus another $25 million to support our lending efforts. So, you know, touch wood that those come to pass, and we'll get to work on those in the second half of the year. There's also a $200 million direct allocation proposed for supporting construction activities at the Windport down in Salem County so that we can begin construction in the August-September timeframe of this year. And deep appreciation, first and foremost, of course, to the governor, but to Kathy and the treasurer and everybody at the Treasury for working with us on that. Just an extraordinary opportunity. That is a game changer of a project, and I think that represents the commitment from the proposed commitment of state resources from the governor represents and underscores how important that project is. That's a project that's going to be built 100% with union labor. That'll also set a new standard for diversity and inclusion as it relates to state construction projects, and we're working hard to achieve both those goals. The other thing I want to mention from the budget is a really exciting initiative that the governor's proposed, the $10 million allocation of funding to support Black and Latino-owned small entrepreneurs and startups. You know, we talked, if you go back to the October 1st of 2018 economic development plan that the governor released, the overall ambition of the plan is to recapture our leadership position and rebuild our reputation as the state of innovation, or strengthen our reputation as the state of innovation. But importantly, there's another commitment attached to that, which is to build the most diverse and inclusive innovation ecosystem in America. A lot easier said than done, but we think that that can be our real competitive advantage. One of the most significant opportunities we think to realize that vision is trying to change the equation of the amount of capital that's available to support particularly Black and Latino-owned startup and new companies. The statistics around the country and around New Jersey are depressing and unacceptable. Never been a better year in 2020 for venture capital, but something like, depending on which study you look at and whether you're looking at the African-American community or the Latino community, it's 1-ish, maybe 1-2% of those dollars have flowed to companies founded by people of color. If you make that women of color, if you make that Black and Latina women, according to Project Dan, that's 0.64% of the venture capital raised in 2018 and 2019 went to companies founded by Black and Latina women. That is unacceptable, and it just can't stand. Governor Murphy has proposed, I think, something really bold and innovative to do something about that, which is a purpose-built seed capital fund to support just those, exclusively those businesses in New Jersey. Obviously, it awaits legislative approval to make that possible, but we think this is an extraordinary opportunity to build on and be a complement to things like the Evergreen Fund that are included in the Economic Recovery Act to really bolster, again, not just innovation, but purposeful and inclusive innovation. Again, a lot easier said than done. A lot of happy words get thrown around a lot, but this is meaningful money to begin to change the equation and demonstrate that this is a prudent investment by the state. So we're humbled by that confidence to launch this program and anticipate and hope that the legislature will concur, and then we get to work on this again in the second half of the year. The other thing I'll mention as it relates to the Economic Recovery Act, Kevin mentioned a number of things, including the transparency and input website. That's really important. We also announced the relaunch of the ERG program, the residential component of the ERG program. There's a lot of interest in residential construction right now. ERG was extended by the governor and the legislature in the Economic Recovery Act for 1 year with a $50 million cap for residential projects. We'd really like to see that put to work. We know there's a lot of demand out there. And so that was announced a week or two ago. The last thing I'll mention as it relates to, shut up, I promise. The governor announced a couple weeks ago that he was standing up a new office within the governor's office, the Office for Climate Action and Green Economy, led by Jane Cohen, who's been a great partner and colleague and champion for many of the things we're working on here at the EDA, not the least of which is the aforementioned Windport. It also includes in conjunction with that, the Council on the Green Economy, which I'm honored to be a part of and to serve on. I think the co-chairs of that are Commissioner Saro Angelo and Acting Commissioner La Tourette and BPU President Joe Fiordaliso. So an all-star group of inside government co-chairs with an honorary co-chair of the First Lady. So, significant attention and focus from the administration, and then an all-star group of folks named by the governor to sit on that council, including, heavy hitter leaders from labor, from the private sector, from industry, from environmental advocacy and sustainability-oriented groups. So it's an extraordinary group that we're really excited about. It has 1 year to come back with a report to the governor. 1 year from 3 weeks ago to come up with a plan and a report to the governor on connecting workforce development and job creation and harnessing all the opportunities that the clean energy economy represents, and also managing some of the challenges that transitions from fossil fuel to clean energy represent. I think it's open-eyed about that. But again, enormously excited to be a part of that and thrilled that EDA gets to be at the table to help shape that vision. So a lot going on, a lot more going on than I get a chance to mention here. In the interest of brevity, I'll hand it back, or happy to take questions and hand it back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. So much to talk about. Next item on the agenda is loans, grants, and guarantees. Christina Fuentes, Managing Director, Community Development, presenting the Micro Lender Support Grant Program. Christina.
Thank you. So this memo is requesting the board members' approval for the creation of a new pilot grant program with the $2 million IKEA donation to identify new lending partners that are experienced in serving microbusinesses. Previously, at the March 26, 2020 board meeting, EDA launched the CDFI Emergency Grant Program, which five New Jersey-based CDFIs applied and were awarded $250,000 grants for a total of $1.25 million to buy down interest rates for loans. I'm sorry? Okay. That went to COVID-impacted business owners to support the scaling up of their operating expenses to better serve small business owners during the pandemic. This initiative was ultimately supported through CARES Act funding. So this new grant micro lender grant program will broaden the pool of eligible entities that can apply for this new pilot program to seek support from EDA. Ultimately, this is an effort to identify a much-needed larger pool of partners that can assist the abundance of New Jersey-based microbusiness owners that are in need of assistance due to the pandemic. Eligible entities that can qualify for this new grant program will be CDFIs. That includes New Jersey-based and also CDFIs based in other states, minority depository institutions that are focused on lending to small business owners, and other entities that are identified as other eligible lenders in the Economic Recovery Act, such as zone development corporations in cities with a population of 100,000 or more, nonprofit lenders with economic development corporations, and community development corporations that have 10 years of experience servicing microbusinesses. Under this program, eligible entities will be able to apply for grants up to $200,000 per entity to help fund efforts to better serve New Jersey microbusinesses. These uses can go towards the need for hiring additional staff in New Jersey only, investment in technology, marketing, and general administrative supplies, plus the buying down of interest rates to allow for lower cost loans for COVID-19 emergency or recovery loan programs to New Jersey based businesses, or it can support any targeted micro lending program to support women, veteran, and minority business owners based in New Jersey to gain access to capital. Each entity that receives an award would have 1 year to fully use their funds. The awardees would have to supply quarterly reporting to EDA staff on how the funds were used and supply full support documentation. Staff is seeking board approval for the creation of this pilot program according to the product specs highlighted in the board memo and utilizing the $2 million through the IKEA donation as the funding source, plus for the delegated authority to approve or decline applicants for this program. That's it. Any questions?
Questions
for Christine. This is Rosemarie. The 1 year to utilize the funds, is that 1 year from the date of the loan approval that they actually have the funds in?
From board approval of the program, and then from when the awardee of the actual program is made. So we would have an application process that they would have to go through, which we have to post a notice to the public. And so potentially the application will go live on April 19th for people to actually apply to. And then we would have to work through those applications and then move forward from that point. So once there's an actual agreement with the entity, yes, 1 year.
Oh, no, I thought you said 1 year. Let's say that if I'm one of the recipients, I apply for the loan, I'm granted or get the approval. Does that 1 year clock start to use those funds from the time that the loan is actually from the time that the dollars are actually in the recipient's hands?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then my other question is that I know that sometimes it takes a while to get loans through the process. Have we found a way to make sure it's the most efficient and streamline where we can so that it doesn't become a 1 or 2 month application process?
So this program is to identify new partners that can potentially serve the business owners. So this is not going to be, this is a grant to those entities to be able to beef up their operations or buy down interest rates to serve additional micro businesses. So to help us identify additional partners. So it's a bit separate from the loan process. So this wouldn't be going through underwriting or closing. And yeah.
Gotcha. So are we going to track these folks more frequently? Because,
yeah.
You know, just to make sure that they're actually loaning the dollars to those folks that need it, and we're not 6 months or a year after the process and find out we haven't touched the people intended.
Yeah, so they'll have quarterly reporting that they have to provide to us, similar to what we did with the CDFI program as well, too. It's really just ensuring how they utilize their grant funding. So they would demonstrate if they used it towards, you know, their operating expenses, but most importantly, we want to make sure if it is outside of New Jersey, an entity that is outside of New Jersey, that they're doing the loans went towards New Jersey-based business owners as well. If they bought down interest rates or created a new loan product, it has to serve New Jersey-based businesses. That's the most important thing. So, yes, they would be providing that reporting.
Okay.
Other questions for Christina? Oh, sorry, Rosemary.
I was just going to make a comment that I would, you know, possibly like to see something a little shorter than 3 months, because 3 months, if they're just started, then it's going to be another 3 months before it gets through a process, which makes it 6 months. So just a consideration that maybe we track and sort of look at this on a more frequent basis. That's all. Thanks.
Great. Thank you. Other questions? If there's no Aisha,
I just have a couple of quick questions on the businesses that are being served through the entities that we expect to grant funds to. Are there any limitations or any criteria for the profile of the businesses that are being served that are benefiting from these services?
We didn't limit the type of business that would be potentially eligible for services. But ideally it'd be, you know, typically we're going to highlight in the application that they would have to demonstrate that they have at least 10 years of experience servicing micro businesses, which we would define as the 10 full-time employees or less, and the $1.5 million or less in revenue. So we're really holistically kind of looking for those entities that can best serve a smaller scale business, which would be built into the application, essentially.
Any limitations around immigrant-run businesses or undocumented, or any limitations or criteria around home-based businesses, or are your selection criteria really going to focus on the grantees and not as much the demographics of the business owner?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really just identifying that. Yeah, the pool of additional partners that can really serve more smaller scale businesses. We're not boxing them into the home base yet, just because if we build out a different program for, you know, associated to the Main Street Recovery Fund, we need essentially more partners that can help us service that. And so that's like kind of to come down the road, I would think, with additional resources that we have. We would bake those, you know, kind of restrictions and who would be eligible for those potential programs into the actual program. And then this is really just identifying the partners that can really help EDA service additionally. I mean, just the demand that's out there due to all these additional partners and, you know, the need just through the pandemic as well.
Yeah, Aisha, it's Tim. Hey, how are you? Generally speaking, our general position on whenever we can is that we don't ask questions with regard to immigration status, but we do require folks to be in good standing with other entities of the state. That can often mean they have to be, you know, have, you know, documentation, you know, in place, but we don't specifically ask questions about that.
Got it. Understood. Okay. I think overall it is important to expand our reach beyond CDFI. So I think, you know, just philosophically agree with the strategy here.
Okay. Other questions?
Yeah. This is Rosemary again. I'd like to circle back and sort of echo what she said, is that I think that we maybe should look at extend it beyond the CDFI, but also if we're talking about helping and sustaining small and micro businesses, maybe we need to also start to look at some of those small businesses that provide similar services that are Black and brown organizations. So that's another way to help opposed to simply being on the end of, you know, the recipient of dollars, but providing business opportunities that are sustainable and that can help those businesses grow. So I think maybe we should look at add another prong to this approach for consideration.
Yeah, Christina, correct me if I'm wrong. Christina, or go ahead. Let's talk ahead.
No, I was just going to say for both, I think, Rosemary and Faraisha, really, really good questions. Two things I do want to point out. One, we're expanding the footprint beyond New Jersey because we think it's important to have a wider net of lenders that we're working with that target specific communities. The other piece that's in the memo focuses on the minority depository institutions, which is something that we haven't done before. And so when we're talking about targeted population, minority women, business enterprises, that's included with MDI. And that's something on a federal level that Senator Booker and others are also pushing for, recognizing the importance of MDIs, especially as we come out of COVID. So I think that covers a broad spectrum of the groups you're talking about. And then, Rosemary, I know from the last conversation that we had, we talked about just some of the experiences we're looking for these new entities to have. So, again, significant experience working with underserved business segments, significant experience working in communities that have been underserved by other financial institutions. And so these are things that we intentionally put into the memo and are putting into the application as part of, A, the rationale to expand our footprint, but, B, putting the CDFIs and MDIs on notice that this is what we're looking for partnering with them on this pilot program. And so, again, I think this is a great opportunity to have some learned experiences, take best practices, and then build it into a bigger program if it's successful. So I hope that answered some of your questions. And, Tim, I apologize. I'll yield over to you.
You did a much better job of saying the themes I wanted to say, so thank you.
Any more questions or comments? If there are none, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Aisha Glover, a second.
Thank you, Aisha. Any more discussion? If there's no discussion, all in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Next on the agenda is the hearing officer's recommendation on the appeal of John O'Brien regarding his application for a conditional hardship grant under the Petroleum Underground Storage Tank Remediation Upgrade and Closure Fund. Pursuant to the board's written policy on public comments during the open portion of its board meetings, which is available on the authority's website, a single person may speak on behalf of a person or entity appealing an authority decision at the time the board makes its final administrative decision. Mr. Marcus Salduti, Senior Legislative Officer, will present his recommendation. Mr. O'Brien is unavailable, away on business. He has submitted a written statement. Given our virtual environment, Danielle Esser, Director of Governance, will read Mr. O'Brien's written statement prior to taking a vote on this matter. So I'll turn things over to Marcus Salduti to present his recommendation. Thank you, Marcus.
Good morning, everyone. This matter is an appeal of a declination of a hardship grant from the Petroleum Underground Storage Tank Remediation Upgrade and Closure Fund. To qualify for this grant, an applicant cannot have taxable income greater than $250,000 in the year prior to application. On March 6, 2017, the appellant, Mr. O'Brien, applied to DEP for a grant from the fund to reimburse the cost of remediation and removal of a previously undisclosed tank on his property. The discovery of the tank was incident to an inspection conducted prior to the property's sale. Mr. O'Brien was selling his house in New Jersey and was under contract to purchase a retirement home in South Carolina. The remediation that was required, which was completed in December of 2016, delayed the closing of the New Jersey property, the proceeds of which were to be used to satisfy the outstanding mortgage and facilitate the purchase transaction. This delay forced Mr. O'Brien to withdraw money from his IRA in December of 2016. This caused his taxable income for that year to exceed $250,000, which is above the income cap for the program. As a consequence, Mr. O'Brien was denied the grant, and he filed this appeal. Mr. O'Brien's arguments in his appeal can be summarized as follows. Firstly, Mr. O'Brien argues the authority's declination is inconsistent with the intent of the fund in its request for finite tax return information related exclusively to the application. Indeed, his income in the years surrounding the remediation is substantially below the income cap. Secondly, he argues the authority's application is deficient in that it fails to relate an applicant's financial condition to the actual event, but instead to an application filing date of a later time. Thirdly, he claims the statute makes no mention of an income cap in the year prior to application. Though this is an unfortunate circumstance, Mr. O'Brien's arguments are unpersuasive. The authority's application requirements are consistent with the expressed requirements of the Act. Among the documents to be submitted as part of the application are tax returns reflecting taxable income in the year prior to making application. The statute reads in pertinent part, no applicant shall be eligible for a conditional hardship grant if the applicant has a taxable income of no more than $250,000 or a net worth exclusive of the applicant's primary residence and pension of over $500,000. The statute goes on to read, the authority shall base its finding upon the applicant's taxable income in the year prior to the date of the application being submitted. The program's rules read similarly. There is no discretion or exception. Mr. O'Brien may very well be correct in his assertions that if the application was submitted in 2016, or if he waited until 2018, he would have qualified for the grant. However, his assertion that this circumstance is an unintended consequence of a poorly written application is unfounded. The application requirements pertaining to income are consistent with the statute and regulations, the inflexibility of which are beyond the authority's discretion. As such, I concluded that staff that demonstrated sufficient basis for the decision to deny the application.
Do we have any questions for Marcus? Now, what I'd like to do is get a motion to approve. We'll take time once the motions are made to have Danielle read the written statement from the applicant. Can I get a motion to approve?
Kevin, it's Jenny. May I have asked one question? What was the difference in his taxable income? You mentioned it was substantial. What was the difference between his taxable income the year before and the year he was he needed to withdraw from his IRA?
More than triple.
So the withdrawal of the IRA increased his income three times his normal base income. Is that correct?
Approximately, yes. His income surrounding the day surrounding 2016 would have easily qualified, would have easily been below the income cap. But for the IRA withdrawal, which was necessary to facilitate the closing transactions that he was obligated under, incident to his purchase of the South Carolina residence, he would not have had that income, that his income would have qualified, yes.
So if I understand this correctly, so we are rejecting his appeal?
Yes, we are rejecting his appeal based on the requirements of the statute.
Okay. Thank you.
The statute doesn't offer any language for discretion. It says the authority shall base its findings upon the applicant's taxable income in the year prior to the date of application. He applied in March, which means we look to his he applied in March of 2017, which requires us without discretion, to look at his taxable income in 2016. And in 2016, he had to pull out of the IRA to facilitate the transaction because the New Jersey closing sale was delayed, so he couldn't have the money. He wouldn't have had enough money to facilitate the other transaction. It would have required two mortgage approvals, which I didn't think he was able to. I think he indicates he was unable to get. So he had to go to the IRA.
It's
Kathy
and I'm sorry, Kathy. Just to close up, we have no discretion with this. You're saying just because this is what's the word? This is what is in the application. We have no discretion with that. There's no mobility at all.
There's no mobility at all. The statute reads the authority shall base its findings upon the applicant's taxable income in the year prior to the date of application.
Yeah, I mean
it doesn't offer room for any exception, and there is no discretion.
Okay.
The rules read similarly, and as part of the application request the income tax returns. Among the income tax returns, we request for the year prior to the date making application.
Right.
In addition to that, the personal financial statement says, please, indicate your income in the year prior to making application.
Now, I understand what the statute says. My concern is that we have no discretion here because this seems to be like, an anomaly. Okay, I'm just trying to understand better. Thank you.
It's Kathy. I just want to follow up on Jenny's questions because this also seems harsh to me. Is there any flexibility, and obviously I'm not looking for the system, quote-unquote, to be gamed or anything like that, but is there any flexibility regarding when the applicant withdraw his application and submit it for a different tax year? Is there some kind of time relationship between the tank, the remove, the situation with the tank, and when the application is required to be submitted?
There is some latitude with it. I believe it's 18 months. You have up to 18 months. Had he filed his application in 2016, the statute would have required us to look to his 2015 income, which would have kept him under the cap. In addition, I believe he would have had up to 18 months after the remediation to file his application. And so if he could have filed it in 2018, which then would have required us to look to his 2017 income, which also would have been under the cap. But for
so
his
could
filing,
he reapply? I'm sorry. Could he reapply?
I'm not a PUST programmatic expert. I don't know what the application latitude or flexibility is in that case. That may be something to consider.
Good.
But I don't know. I would defer.
But Marcus, it wouldn't change the outcome of this. This applicant has chosen to take the appeals route here. Either way, we have to address this question.
Yeah. Was he informed, though, Tim, that he could potentially reapply at a later date, or was he? Was he just told that his only recourse was to appeal?
The record that I reviewed, which included the correspondence between the EDA and Mr. O'Brien, and the memo from DEP, did not indicate that he was informed of the timing issues.
Yikes. Okay.
So Tim, sorry, this is Gabriel. As Tim said, this the application and appeal, or I should say the appeal and the decision relates to this application. If he, and I have not reviewed, so I do not know if he would still be eligible or not, but this would be about this application, not necessarily about a future application if he decides to. I guess if we're looking at the 18 months, he may be out of time, but this is about the application as well submitted. I don't know.
We can certainly. I don't mean to interrupt, Gabe. We can certainly follow up with him. You know, stuff. Again, my impression is this needs an action one way or the other. I suppose
yes.
You could obviously take whatever action you wish. We're happy to follow up with him and explore his options, but they are what they are.
Yeah,
at this point.
That's what
right.
I was just going to
say. He was offered, as anybody who has declined for a grant, the option of a loan. So that is a standard offer.
Okay. As long as
that is correct. That is correct. Those who don't meet the income cap are offered a loan instead. I did a lot of research. This is not a conclusion that I wanted to draw. I did a lot of research. However, this is the conclusion that I came to based on the record and the law.
Can I be assured that there, as Tim suggested, there would be a conversation with him so that he is aware of any potential other avenues that he could use and be aware of some of the time frame, you know, and I don't know the age of this man, but I just feel like this is really tough. I'm having a hard time approving this.
We will do that, Jenny, for sure.
Hey, Tim, it's Brian. This may be a question for Gabriel. Is there a statutory decision on this appeal that we'd have to make today? It sounds like there's some unanswered question from the board if there was the possibility of tabling this one meeting to try to answer those questions.
As far as I'm aware, this could be tabled. I don't know if Mr. O'Brien requested this at this time.
Can we hear his letter? It's Kathy.
Yeah, that may be good to hear and then decide.
Sure. Danielle, if you could go ahead and read his written statement, please.
Absolutely. We received this email this morning. Marcus shared it, and I've been asked to just read it. I'll just read it off. Good morning, Marcus. I will not be able to listen to the NJEDA board meeting this morning. However, I did look at the agenda and saw that the hearing officer intends to recommend against my appeal. This is quite disappointing to me. I was actually feeling more like the appeal would be approved. I say that because the hearing officer never approached me with any questions on the appeal and offered no rebuttal to any of the many comments I offered. I do not know who the hearing officer is, but even in all of my communications with you, there were only requests for copies of my communications to NJDEP and NJEDA. I am very concerned that the denial of the appeal may be based on the fact that my information does not meet the criteria and timing requested in the application. The board should know clearly that I understand the statutes that you kindly shared with me and agree with them completely. My appeal is not based on the statutes as written, but on the fact that the application does not adequately reflect the statute and the timing of an application for reimbursement of an improved NJDEP event. Some of my correspondence stating this to NJEDA was also copied to each board member. While I do not expect them to do the research, they should be reminded that the issue is how the application is framed and that it actually prevents a reviewer from approving an application when the application is submitted by necessity in a subsequent calendar year. If the hearing officer has not focused on the inadequacy of the application form, then I respectfully request that my appeal hearing be postponed until that point it is fully vetted. I wish that the hearing officer could have shared his or her summation for the board with me. At the very least, I wish I had been given the courtesy of conversation so that I could have been comfortable with their understanding of my point and my understanding of their point of view. I assume I will receive a copy of the summation to the board.
Well, it's Kathy. I'm clearly the applicant is open to a postponement of the determination.
Yep.
It's worth noting the applicant may not have realized that Marcus was the hearing officer, so when he said he wasn't in dialogue with the hearing officer, I don't think that's an accurate representation.
Yeah, the applicant was aware I was the hearing officer. I've communicated that to the applicant. As per our procedure in our appeals manual, our appeals standard operating procedure.
Is there any way we can table this and have further discussion with him and see if we can come up with another solution?
So mm-hmm. At this point, I think we could consider a motion to table if one of the board members would like to make one.
Mm-hmm. I would be concerned about the precedent we're setting here. Over the years, we have denied a lot of these because they didn't fit all the qualifications needed here. If we table this and start consider more, now we have to deal with everybody comes down the road.
I'm sorry, who just spoke?
This is Ross, Fred.
Sorry, who just made that statement?
That was Fred Dumont.
Thanks.
Hey, this is Robbie Angelo, and I applaud the person with Cube.
Okay.
The law is very clear. And Marcus is our hearing officer, and he did a great job. And if there's a problem with the application, we can look at that separately. But I think, as Fred said, we're going down a slippery slope here. Every day, all of it turns down tens of thousands of helpers and schools for folks in the country, which all of them are bound. But we are bound by the law.
I'm not questioning Marcus's work. I'm not at all. You understand my concern.
So this is Charles. I agree with what Fred and I think Rob was just saying. Unfortunately, I think we're bound by the statute. Historically, we've taken the hearing officer's review and recommendation, and the board has looked at it independently and seen if the review and recommendation complies with the regulation and statute. There may well be the application here may not necessarily, and I've never seen the application, but may not be informative that it actually goes back to a statute or regulation to the layperson, and maybe that's something administratively we have to look at. But I do think we are clearly bound by the statute and regulations, and I think that's what the recommendation is. In terms of, I know there's some talk about potentially having the applicant reapply. My suggestion would be before staff reaches out to this individual, I would like to have Gabe do research and do an opinion whether or not, if the board does move forward and this is a final action, whether or not the applicant, has the ability to make a second application after a denial. I wouldn't want to put staff in the position of potentially offering something and then it coming back and a legal opinion being that it legally cannot be done.
We can't do it.
Right. We would review, but that is something that the board would need to consider, since I'm not sure that has been looked at this point.
Go
ahead, Kathy.
No, go ahead, Jenny. That's fine.
No, I was just going to suggest, I think I don't want to drag this on anymore. If we can make sure that we have any other opportunities and we investigate that, I'm more comfortable with it. I just hate to have this as a closed matter without making sure that he is aware and certainly the agency does its due diligence to see if there's any other way that we can help him. That's all.
We will do that, Jenny.
All right.
Hi, this is Jane. I just point out too that from DEP's perspective, we'll certainly follow up with EDA staff on making sure that there's the appropriate communication back to the applicant as well, and in reviewing the application documents.
Okay.
It's Fred. If it's appropriate, I'll make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Fred. Can I get a second, please?
Mr. Chairman, it's Brian. I'm just a little unclear where we stand now. Is this the motion to approve tabling it 1 month to see if this is a final agency determination that will preclude any other avenues, or is this a motion to approve the resolution as it stands?
My motion
is a motion.
The denial.
Go ahead. My
motion is to approve the denial.
Right. Fred is moving to accept Marcus's recommendation on the appeal, which is to deny it.
Thank you for the clarification.
Can I get a second?
Rob Angelo, second.
Thank you, Rob. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Ms. Aisha Glover, right. I'm going to abstain. I feel like there's just a lot to consider, and hearing the applicant's response, I'm going to abstain from voting.
This is Rosemarie. Okay. I will do the same. Abstain from voting on this one as well.
All right. Thank you.
I'm sorry, this is Danielle. Was there a third abstention, or was that just Aisha and Rosemarie?
Just Aisha and Rosemarie.
Thank you.
Now, I think we're ready to move on in our agenda. Let me read just a brief policy committee report. As chair of the policy committee, I can share the next two agenda items under authority matters and economic growth represent forward progress, including NJEDA's partnership with NJIT on the Brownfields Assistance Center, working to bring more developable land back to productive use, and further progress pertaining to the New Jersey Wind Port. Both initiatives represent priorities of this administration working steadfastly to advance New Jersey's economic development opportunities. The first item under and only item under authority matters is the extension of the Memorandum of Understanding for NJ Brownfields Assistance Center at NJIT. Elizabeth Limbrick, Director of Brownfield and Sustainable Systems, presenting. Elizabeth.
Thank you. Yes, so this memo is to extend that MOU to continue to support the New Jersey Brownfield Assistance Center at NJIT. As you mentioned, you know, brownfields really are an important part of the goals that have been laid out in the governor's State of Innovation Plan, which includes strategies to achieve a goal of a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy. And I point out that that actually seeks to accomplish those goals by 2025, which ties in with the timing requested within this memo. So, you know, brownfield redevelopment is just a great way to get money and jobs and an improved quality of life back into especially distressed areas. And by supporting brownfield redevelopment, we're really achieving economic justice and environmental justice at the same time. By way of background, you may recall last year on January 16, 2020, the board approved an MOU with NJIT for the authority to provide $200,000 in funding to establish the New Jersey Brownfield Assistance Center at NJIT, so that they could then provide a variety of technical assistance and resource products for brownfield communities throughout the state of New Jersey. The MOU was executed in February 2020 with a one-year term with the option to extend annually. While COVID-19 did hinder the ability to have in-person events, the center has really pivoted and excelled over the past year. They've assisted over 100 public entities, including 4 Brownfield Blueprint Learning Labs. They've hosted 6 webinars, participated in conferences, authored 6 articles, and provided one-on-one technical assistance to communities throughout New Jersey. And this far exceeds the scope of work that was documented in the MOU. You know, just as an example, over the past year, among other things, they have drafted the user's guide for our Brownfield Loan Program that's available on our website. And in this year, with resources stretched so thin due to COVID, this is something we would not have been able to do without their assistance. Again, you know, they've done just so many pieces, and they're continuing to help us. They've done a webinar on our Brownfield Loan Program. And again, this is the kind of support we truly value. And it freed up NJEDA staff to focus on other priorities, you know, again, especially those priorities that are related to COVID. I'd also mention that this work dovetails very nicely with our other brownfield programs, providing a full suite of resources to catalyze brownfield redevelopment. And that really runs the gamut from technical assistance to investment resources. Again, we have the $15 million competitive brownfield loan program. I would add that we are accepting applications right now through April 13th. We have the Community Collaborative Initiative Partnership with NJDEP. We have the Brownfield Impact Fund, which is funded by a grant from the United States Environmental Protection Agency, which is currently under development. And now, as referenced earlier, the $50 million per year Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive, which is part of the Economic Recovery Act, and that is under development currently. So the New Jersey Brownfield Assistance Center is actively supporting the Brownfield Loan Program rollout on several fronts, that $15 million program. Again, they drafted that user's guide for the program. They are assisting us with compiling the FAQs. They coordinated and hosted the Brownfield Loan informational webinar, which had 147 participants, and they are assisting with promoting the program via email blasts and social media posts. So by extending this MOU, it would allow the center to build upon the work they've already completed and then continue to build those lasting relationships with communities as they overcome their Brownfield challenges. Extending the MOU would not only help them, but it would help us because it's going to help communities learn how to successfully use the Brownfield loans that they could receive from our program. And so that will not only support the community's success, but will support the success of EDA's Brownfield program. So with that, the members' approval is specifically requested to extend the MOU for a period of 12 months, provide additional funding in the amount of $200,000 to NJIT for the New Jersey Brownfield Assistance Center at NJIT, which is the same amount we had provided last year, and also to grant delegated authority to permit the chief executive officer to extend the MOU on the same term on an annual basis at a cost not to exceed $200,000 per year for up to 3 years. Thank you.
Great. Any questions for Elizabeth? If we have no questions for Elizabeth, can I get a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion. Jane Rosenblatt. Marlene Caridi,
second. Thank you, Jane. Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda under economic growth, the New Jersey Windport requests for increase to Moffitt and Nickel contract value to accommodate electricity substation and distribution system design. Jonathan Kennedy, Director, Sector Lead Infrastructure, Economic Transformation, presenting. Jonathan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members are asked to approve an increase to the authority's existing contract with Moffitt and Nickel, the authority's engineer of record on the Windport project. This increase of $353,854 will cover engineering and design works for an electricity substation and distribution system at the port. At its January 2021 meeting, the board approved funding for the Atlantic City Electric to commence feasibility for a transmission line connection to the port. This assessment recently commenced and is expected to take eight or so months to complete. The authority has learned that AC's electrical transmission line will cease at the port boundary. That means that in order to safely distribute power across the port, circa 200 acres proposed footprint, the authority will need to develop an on-site substation and distribution system. As the engineer of record for the port, MNN is familiar with the site and is uniquely placed to ensure that electricity-related design works fit within the port's overall design. MNN have agreed to undertake this work for a lump sum price of $353,854 and a completion timeframe of 6 to 8 months. With the assistance of the authority's owner's engineers at WSP, staff have interrogated this price and scope and are satisfied that it's both fair value and fits with the requirements of the port. Approval of this request will increase the total value of the M&N contract to $9.5 million. It will also increase the total approved funding for the port to date, $22.1 million. In summary, members are asked to approve a $353,854 increase to the authority's existing contract with Moffitt and Nickel, Members should note that while these costs will be expended at risk by the authority on behalf of the state, staff anticipate capitalizing them into the development of the project, with these capital costs reimbursed to the authority once project funding or financing is in place. Thank you, and happy to answer any questions.
Sure. Questions for Jonathan? If we have no questions for Jonathan, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion, Kathy.
Fred Dumas.
Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Yes, this is Jane Rosenblatt on behalf of the department abstaining as there's pending permits for review before the department.
Great. Thank you, Jane. Next item on the agenda, COVID-19 response. The only item here is Community Development CDFI Emergency Loan Loss Reserve Fund Program Extension. Christina Fuentes, Managing Director, Community Development, presenting. Christina.
Thank you. So the CDFI Loan Loss Reserve Program was approved at EDA's March 26, 2020 special board meeting. This program allowed EDA to do a $10 million reservation on their balance sheet to provide guarantees on loans that are approved by the CDFIs and registered with EDA. Each CDFI was to administer their own working capital loan programs from application to closing and then registered each loan with EDA towards this allocation. This program allows the CDFI to do more lending since they can register eligible loans against the EDA loan loss reserve, knowing the loan is covered in case of a future default. Some CDFIs have raised larger capital pools to lend out compared to others and need more time to use this program to register additional loans. When staff presented this action last year, it was mentioned that 1 year may not be long enough and would seek an extension. So this action is seeking board approval for the ability to extend the CDFI Loan Loss Reserve Program through delegated authority, as highlighted in the board memo. All loan activity for this program is reported out on a monthly basis to the COVID committee. And to date, 349 loans for a total of $8.3 million have been registered so far.
Great. Thank you, Christina. Questions for Christina? If we have no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
It's Ginny. I'll move it, Ginny Barrow.
Thank you, Ginny. Can I get a second?
There was some good news.
Can I get a second there? We have some background noise.
Second, Kathy.
Thank you, Kathy. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, turning things over to the Incentives Committee report. Ginny Bell, would you like to offer a few words in advance of the incentive items on our agenda today?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, I just will mention that the committee met on February 25th, and we have a brief but always important agenda items and a number of film and tax credits. So with that, I will defer back to you. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. First item under incentives is ERG-related business, Camden Hotel Partners LLC, Economic Redevelopment and Growth Grant Program. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentive Relationship Management, presenting. Susan.
Hi there. Good morning. Thank you so much. So the request you have before you is to redesignate the applicant name on this commercial ERG from Camden Hotel Partners LLC to CHP Land LLC. And in June of 17, the board approved an award of 40% of total eligible costs, not to exceed $18.4 million, to construct an eight-story hotel of approximately 118,000 square feet in Camden. At the time, the applicant was named CHP Land. In November of 17, CHP Land requested and was approved to change the applicant entity to Camden Hotel Partners. This is because Camden Hotel Partners was brought in to help finance the project and would ultimately operate the hotel. Further, the parties thought that the ERG disbursements under this program would go to that entity. So that was the reason for the change. Then fast forward to March of 2020, project has been completed with a capital investment of more than $58 million. The hotel opened in December of 20. When fully staffed, they anticipate to have about 60 full-time employees. We were glad to hear that they have an agreement with Camden for local hiring priorities. So that was great news. As we began to discuss them coming in for certification of project completion, we realized that all of the costs were incurred under the land entity. So in order to align what is required in the ERG law for incense, they would like to switch back to the entity that actually spent the money and made the capital investment. Obviously, these two are related entities. In order to assure that the proposed project continued to meet the eligibility requirements, we reviewed the rate of return that is needed to move forward with a hotel project in Camden. Originally, when they were approved, the rate of return was determined to be 5.72%. It's now 10.93%. The JLL hurdle rate model that EDA uses says that it's 14.61% is the hurdle rate in Camden. So they certainly still meet eligibility requirements. We feel that the project is exactly what we understood it to be at the outset. They've got the hotel operational, and we'd like to request that the members agree to update and redesignate the applicant entity to CHP Land. So I'm happy to answer any questions y'all might have.
Questions for Christina? If there's no questions, can I get a motion to approve?
It's Jenny. I'll move it.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second? Can I get a second, please?
It's Rosemary. I'll second.
Thank you, Rosemary. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda is the Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting. He will make one presentation, but we will have to take three separate votes on each of the three film/TV credits. David?
Thank you. EDA staff has completed the review and recommends approval of three applications under the Film Tax Credit Program. We have received written confirmation from an outside firm hired to review the production budgets that they are reasonable by industry standards. All of the content has also been reviewed and recommended for approval under the Act by the New Jersey Motion Picture and Television Commission. Total credits utilized across the three recommended approvals is $1.32 million. The first application is Black Friday the Film, Inc., who produced Red 48. We are recommending an award of $922,633.80. The second application is Shackled Film LLC, who will produce Shackled. We are recommending an award of $102,921.60, which includes a diversity bonus of $6,432.60. The third application is Who is Kurt LLC, who produced Kurt. We are recommending an award of $297,048.60. And as mentioned, each project needs its own separate vote.
Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David before proceeding to the three votes? So let's move forward with the first item, Black Friday the Film, a tax credit of just over $900,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
It's Rosemary. I motion to approve.
And Jenny,
I'll second. Thank you, Rosemary. Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? The second film item on the agenda, Shackled Film LLC, tax credit just over $100,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
It's Jenny. I'll move it again.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Angela.
Marlene, I'm seconding.
Thank you, Rob. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Last item, film and digital media tax credit. Who is Kurt, LLC? Tax credit in the amount just under $300,000. Can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
It's Rosemary, I second.
Thank you, Rosemary. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the real estate section of our agenda. Charles Sarlo is our chair of the Real Estate Committee. Charles, would you like to offer a few brief words in advance of the real estate items on the agenda today?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Members of the board, the Real Estate Committee did meet and heard presentations from the staff on a number of matters. As a prelude to this board meeting, two of the matters involved redevelopment agreements with for the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority. I know the board members have historically heard presentations on real estate agreements in the past with regard to private developers looking to develop property at Fort Monmouth. As the board members are aware, the EDA is involved because by the statute, the EDA is the designated redeveloper of Fort Monmouth, and then we pass on our authority down to the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization. The two agreements were with New Jersey American Water as well as the borough of Eatontown, and without getting into specifics, as staff will present them, I think the committee members as well as myself, I think for both transactions, there was a creative approach in structuring a deal that addresses the fort's required commitments to improving the infrastructure while also promoting the general welfare of the communities in the area. The third matter that the committee also considered was a extension of a parking management agreement with the New Jersey Aquarium for the Camden waterfront. Again, board members that have been on the board for the last several years, this is an annual agreement, and in conjunction with that, there is a recommendation by staff to give delegated authority to the CEO for the next 10 years. The committee members had some commentary on that and wanted to just tighten up some of the language, which staff worked into the memo being presented to the board members. And then lastly, the fourth matter was an amendment to a payment in lieu of taxes for the New Jersey Bioscience Center with the North Brunswick Township. And again, at least my opinion, I think it echoes from the committee members that the staff's negotiation with the township represents a fair and equitable pilot distribution to the EDA's tenants, and it provides a uniform pilot rate cap and a cap with the township. So with that as an introduction, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it back over to staff and let them present to the full board for their consideration.
Great. Thank you so much, Charles. First item is the FEMIRA purchase and sale and redevelopment agreement with New Jersey American Water for the water tank parcel in Eatontown. David Noose, Executive Vice President, Real Estate, Finance, and Development, presenting. David.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. Staff is seeking the board's consent to a transaction involving the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority's sale of a four-acre parcel in Eatontown to New Jersey American Water Company. The sale will enable the company to construct a 2-million-gallon water tank on the fort. NJAW has a critical need to construct a water storage tank in the vicinity of Fort Monmouth in order to improve water pressure in that area of Monmouth County. FEMIRA has worked out an agreement whereby NJAW will acquire the 4-acre Eatontown site in return for making three expenditures. First, the company will bear the cost of demolishing improvements and performing environmental remediation on the property at an estimated cost of $1 million. Second, it will install a mile-long length of 24-inch water mains on the fort's main post at a cost of approximately $1.3 million. And third, it will pay $80,000 into FEMIRA's homeless trust fund. The cost of these three items exceeds the appraised value of the land NJAW will be acquiring. This arrangement also benefits FEMIRA by advancing the timeline for water main installation on Fort Mammoth's main post by about 3 years. As Charles mentioned, FEMIRA routinely seeks CDA board consent before conveying property because the statute that created FEMIRA names EDA as a potential redeveloper of the fort. EDA consent, therefore, is required so that redevelopers acquiring property from FEMIRA can obtain clear title. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for David? If there's no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Second, Brennan.
Jenny Power.
Thank you, Kathy. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Oh, sorry. There's a good aye there. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda, the FEMIRA Purchase and Sale and Redevelopment Agreement with the Borough of Eatontown for a Parks and Recreation Complex on the Nicodemus Park Parcel in Eatontown. David, we're sticking with you.
Thank you, Chairman. Staff is also seeking the board's consent to FEMIRA's proposed sale of a 3.82-acre property overlooking Husky Brook Lake to the Borough of Eatontown for use as a public park. The property would be sold in accordance with FEMIRA's board-approved guidelines for local beneficial uses. Those guidelines allow FEMIRA to sell property to any of its three host municipalities or to Monmouth County on a sole source basis at a discount of up to 40% off appraised value. For this transaction, that resulted in a discounted price of $119,139. Eatontown will be obligated to demolish several former Army buildings and construct a public park within 21 months of closing. It must invest a minimum of $250,000 in the project and create two temporary or permanent jobs. Staff recommends that the board also consent to this transaction. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, David. Any questions for David? If there's no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Rosenblatt, Jane, second.
Thank you, Jane. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Next item is parking management agreement with New Jersey Aquarium for the Camden Waterfront. David Noose scoring a hat trick this morning. David.
Thank you, Chairman. We're seeking authority to extend our parking management agreement with the New Jersey Aquarium LLC for a one-year term retroactive to September 16, 2020, and provide for annual renewal options for a 10-year period. In accordance with the aquarium's operating agreement with Treasury and the authority, EDA constructed two parking lots to serve aquarium visitors. The aquarium has the right to operate the lots and receive a reasonable management fee, with EDA receiving the net revenue. The proposed agreement maintains the aquarium's management fee at 10% of parking revenue, but reduces EDA's contribution toward waterfront marketing to the lesser of 6.5% of parking revenue, or $126,500. This figure is one half of the amount provided for under the prior agreement. EDA has agreed to continue the marketing contribution for one additional year to help the aquarium and the other Camden waterfront attractions rebound from the pandemic. We're also requesting that the board delegate to the chief executive officer authority to enter into annual parking management agreements over the next 10 years. However, any change that has a material impact on the terms and conditions of the parking management agreements or the anticipated compensation to the authority during that 10-year period will require board approval. I do wish to note that the parking management agreement will be subject to the New Jersey Sports and Exhibition Authority's approval, as the Sports Authority is a member of the Aquariums LLC. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, David. Any questions for David? There's no questions for David. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Charles Sarlo.
Thank you, Charles. Can
second
I get a second?
Second by Karidi.
Thank you, Marlene.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, our last item under real estate on the agenda is the New Jersey Bioscience Center, the Eighth Amendment to the Payment in Lieu of Taxes Agreement and Other Matters with North Brunswick Township. Juan Burgos, Director of Finance and Development, Real Estate and Community Development, presenting. Juan.
Good morning, everyone. The members are being requested to approve the Eighth Amendment to the Pilot Agreement at the New Jersey Bioscience Center, which will establish an assessment for buildings 1 through 4, establish the rate for the first year of $5.51 a square foot for the calendar year, and will limit the increases of up to 2% annually through December 31st, 2025. The background of this agreement is when the center was purchased and initially developed by the authority, it entered into a pilot agreement on behalf of all the tenants with North Brunswick Township in 1996. To date, the members have approved 7 amendments to the pilot. This amendment will establish an assessment for buildings 1 through 4. Building 5 is excluded because it's a vacant, unfinished shell, and if it's developed at any future time or any other building is developed at the center, an assessment will be established according to real estate tax law, and the pilot would be amended. The pilot is capped at the lesser of 2% or the actual tax rate for the period through December 31st, 2025. Commencing in 2022, the tax rate will change mid-year according with the tax change in the municipality. The Eighth Amendment will yield the following results. It will establish a uniform tax rate for all the buildings 1 through 4, and all the tenants will pay a rate that is equivalent to the taxes on the real and personal property as if they had owned it. Currently, the savings on the 2020 tax to the 2021 tax is approximately $13 a square foot of occupied space. Any questions?
Questions for Juan? There's no questions for Juan. Can I get a motion to approve?
Kathy, motion.
And Jenny.
Thank
also.
You, Kathy. Can I get a second? Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item on the agenda is board memoranda. Tim Sullivan, CEO, presenting.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. A couple things for your consideration. There's just two memos in your board book related to delegated authority. Want to highlight two premier lender program approvals and 21 microbusiness program loans approved. We've been really focused on trying to get that program, which we took applications for last year, revved up and moving expeditiously. And kudos to the team in underwriting and closing that has done so. It's not a COVID-specific program, but of course, anything going on with the microbusiness right now is heavily impacted by COVID, and so really pleased we're able to get that program rocking and rolling here as we turn the corner into the recovery time. The Premier Lender program also advanced $1.25 million loan. Total loan, the EDA participation was $360,000 in Millville in Cumberland County, so making sure we're getting our programs active everywhere throughout the state is important, and so thrilled to be able to do something in Millville to advance a project there. So again, lots going on, lot happens in between these meetings, good to report on it from here. Happy to take any questions.
Any questions for Tim? If we have no questions for Tim, we now move to the public comment portion of our agenda. First, I'd like to ask Danielle Esser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and the process for this telephonic board meeting, as well as availability of COVID-19 resources for businesses seeking information. Danielle?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated by the operator at the beginning of the meeting, members of the public interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on their phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. Given the number of the members of the public on the call, we'd like to go over the NJEDA's public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted by the operator to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. The speaker may not speak more than once during the same public comment period. Speakers may also submit their comments in writing. For members of the public seeking information on COVID-19 resources for businesses, we direct you to cv.business.nj.gov, which is staffed by business advocates at the New Jersey Business Action Center. The site includes a chat feature staffed to answer your business-related questions to COVID-19. You can also call the state's COVID-19 business hotline 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday at 1-800-JERSEY-7 or 1-800-537-7397. The portal can also be accessed directly from the NJEDA main page, njeda.com. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
And ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment for our first question. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1, then 0 at this time. And at this time, there are no questions in queue.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everybody for their participation this morning. I'll now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second, please?
Caridi, second.
Thank you, Marlene. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. This concludes our meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Take care, everyone.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.
Thank you.
We're sorry. Your conference is ending now. Please hang up.